Hey, you guys. Welcome back to Flickers of Fear, my little movie review series. So, overall, I've generally had pretty good luck with most of these Shudder originals and Shudder exclusives that I've watched on there. I will say that the team at Shudder really seem to have a really good handle on curating really well, like, what appears on their streaming service. Like, they have, like, a good variety of stuff, and they seem to, like, know what horror fans want to watch. So pretty much, like, almost everything that they acquire, that they have a hand in producing, is at least worth watching. No, I am actually not sponsored by Shudder. It would be nice, but you know what I mean. But I've had them for a really long time, and I just think they're a really, really good streaming service if you're a horror fan, and especially that doesn't, you know, especially for the reasonable price. I mean, really, I think it's only like $50-something a year, and you know, it's just a really good deal. They have like a really good lot of good stuff on there. So on a very recent live stream, I can't remember if it was like a week or two ago or something like that, somebody in the chat recommended the 2022 Shudder original film Revealer to me. So I wrote it down and I was like, okay, well, I have not been keeping up with Shudder as much because I have so many other streaming services too. And, you know, so I've been jumping back and forth. So I was kind of happy to get back into like a new like Shudder exclusive that I could watch because I had kind of been neglecting them a little bit. So I will say, I mean, the poster looks fantastic. It has that real 80s like new retro wave kind of vibe that I love. And I read the one sentence synopsis of it and it sounded like a lot of fun. So I was like, okay, I'm game. Let's jump right in. So Revealer is actually the feature film debut of a guy named Luke Boyce. Now, his previous stuff, I believe he made some documentaries, and he also made a kind of widely praised short film called The Pooka back in 2017. Now, that was actually completely, absolutely nothing to do with the Hulu Into the Dark, like, original horror films Pooka from 2018 and Pooka Lives from 2020, both of which I've talked about on this series at various times. So it doesn't have anything to do with that. It just kind of happens that it was called the same thing. So Luke Boyce also wrote this film, or co-wrote it, rather. His other two writers on it were a guy named Michael Morici, I guess is how you pronounce his last name. He's a comic author and a novelist. He's written, like, some Star Wars fan, like, you know, novels in that canon and stuff like that. Probably best known for stuff like Burning Fields, like that comic, and Roche Limit, which is, like, a sci-fi. And also, you got comic artist and writer Tim Seeley, probably best known for Hack Slash, and he also did Revival. So, again, like, a comic artist and writer. So, this movie, Revealer, it clearly has a very, very minuscule budget. Not sure exactly what the budget was, but it was pretty small. And it was shot largely during the COVID lockdown, I guess, like over the summer, I believe, of 2020. But I will say that it has like a very ambitious premise for its extremely limited locations and its very, very small cast. So I do actually like really admire that. So at the beginning of the movie, after this brief and sort of strange little teaser prologue kind of scene, there's like a televangelist who actually never appears again in the rest of the movie, I don't think. And he seems to be enduring some type of judgment or something like that in this very narrow hallway, which is kind of lit with this real hellish like red light. So after we see that, we get into the story proper. So Cato Ace, I guess is how you pronounce her last name. She plays Angie, who's kind of like this wise ass, you know, no nonsense stripper. And she makes a living dancing in a peep show booth in this kind of sleazy adult bookstore, which is called Revealers. And this is actually set in the 80s. So it's set in 1987 in Chicago. So she's one of the main characters. Now, Angie's arch nemesis is this girl named Sally, who's played by Shayna Shrutin. Now, Sally is like this uptight Bible thumper type. She's got like this really tragic, like super frizzy hair and those big like 80s enormous like nerd glasses. And she heads this protest group that has taken it upon themselves to kind of, you know, hang out. Like they sort of camp out in front of this strip joint, essentially, like this adult bookstore. And they just kind of wave their signs all the time, screeching at anybody that sort of dares to enter this den of iniquity. It's going to go in there and, like, you know, watch the ladies within sort of shaking their little sinful moneymakers there. So, yeah. So, they, like I said, this is kind of like their mission in life, just to hang outside and harass people that go into this, like, adult bookstore. So, I actually got really immediately, like, sucked into this scenario because it gave me, like, this whole satanic panic kind of energy because, I mean, I remember what it was like in 1987, you had these kind of real, like, sanctimonious kind of, like, motherfuckers, like, hanging out in front of strip joints and stuff like that. I mean, I know they still do that nowadays, but it was kind of, like, more of a big thing back then, so I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I remember this kind of crap. So, Angie, the stripper, she's clearly done with this shit. She's had enough of these kind of, like, these religious weirdos making her already hard life, like, even more difficult. But she also does seem to enjoy kind of verbally sparring with Sally, like, kind of going back and forth, mostly because it seems like it's really easy to, like, offend her tender sensibilities. So, you know, all you have to do is, like, swear or, like, say something kind of, like, sexually suggestive, and she gets all, like, upset about it, which is, like, kind of funny. So there's some back and forth between the two of them in the parking lot. And then Angie goes into the building where we're going to be spending pretty much the rest of the movie. Like I said, this is very much a bottle type of movie, I guess, where it's just kind of essentially one location. So know that going in that it's just, even though the premise of it is like very vast, it's actually like pretty much just one location. So she gets in the building and kind of shares some more banter with the owner manager, not really sure if he owns the place or manages it, whose name is Ray, who's played by Bishop Stevens. And then, like, she goes down to her peep booth. She's like, I need to pick up an extra shift, you know, like, for some extra money or whatever. And there's some foreshadowing about how the door of her peep booth, like, always sticks, and, like, she always has to have Ray to come in there and kind of muscle it, and it's, like, really hard to open because there's some kind of, like, thing with the floorboard, like, sticking up, which will play into it later on. So, like I said, that's kind of like foreshadowing. So after that, she kind of like goes to work, and, you know, she dances on her chair. There's kind of like a dance sequence with like these really gorgeous like pink and blue like neon lights and all this other kind of stuff. And then you see kind of like the, you know, the panting dudes that are coming in, like sticking their crumply $5 bills like through the slot, and she's like performing for each one of them. And the music in this is great, by the way, which I'll get back to in a minute. But yeah, it's like really, really good music in this too. So there's like kind of a cool like dance sequence, you know what I mean? But not too long into the festivities, something rather dire seems to be occurring outside of this adult bookstore. So we just see like a very brief shot of like Sally like outside. She's looking very awed and also like very terrified, and she's kind of like you know, imposed against the sky, and the sky is just like turning orange and it's like boiling with clouds, and there's just like lightning that doesn't really look like it's all that natural. And Angie meanwhile is inside, and she's still in the booth like waiting for the next customer, and she starts hearing something that sounds really bad from outside. Like she hears like people banging and screaming and like all this other kind of stuff. So she's like shouting to Ray, like, what the fuck is going on out there? You know what I mean? It sounds like really bad. And he doesn't answer her. So at one point, like the protesters who are all outside all try to like pile into the bookstore, and like through the door you see that there's like some, you know, bad looking shit going on outside. But Ray like forces them out, like, get the fuck out of here, what are you doing? So actually only Sally manages to make her way into the adult bookstore, and she hides in one of the booths, which is like adjoining Angie's, like it's right next to it. So then once everything has kind of gone quiet a bit, Sally reveals that you know, she's talking to her through the booth wall, that all hell has literally broken loose outside. In short, end of the world is at hand. It's time to repent, all this other kind of stuff. Now, of course, Angie does not believe it at first, because who would? She's like, hey, if anything apocalyptic is going on out there, I'm sure, like, the Russians are responsible, because 80s. But Sally is, like, pretty insistent about it. No, this is it. Like, biblical end of the world, it's happening. And she gets, like, super, super sanctimonious about it. She's certain that she will eventually be raptured up to heaven. And Angie, you know, her trampy ass, is going to be judged, and she's going to be left to suffer for eternity on the hell that the earth will become. So she's kind of like, Sally's kind of like rubbing it in a little bit. It's like, we told you guys you're going to happen, but it's like your liberal media would like wouldn't listen to us and all this other kind of stuff. And it's like pretty funny. So there was all that kind of stuff, and she's just like, okay, whatever. But she, yeah, she's being a real snot about it. Like, she thinks she's going to be all special and rescued and stuff like that. So this is essentially the premise in a nutshell. Yes, the biblical apocalypse is actually happening in 1987, and Angie is trapped in her peep show booth, because remember I said the door sticks and she can't like get it open by herself. And not only that, as if that wasn't bad enough, being trapped in a peep show booth and it's the end of the world, she also has to listen to this insufferable old bitch that's like just telling her what a hoe she is, like through the wall. It's like, you know, it's like her worst enemy. So I guess it kind of is hell on earth from that point of view. But as the story goes on, and these two like diametrically opposed women have to work together to, you know, first make their way out of the booth and then like try to get out of the place by going there. They start like going through like the bootlegging tunnels. I don't know if this is Chicago. So they're going like through the bootlegging tunnels, like underneath the city, like they have to get down there. And, you know, so they have to kind of work together to do that. And they're also being like pursued by the demon of judgment or whatever, Asmodeus or whatever his name is. And, so as that goes on, they actually start to develop a mutual respect as they get to know one another as people, as more things about them are revealed, hence the name Revealer, and realize that they're not as different as they once believed, and they both have reasons for doing what they do and the choices that they made. Now, as I mentioned, this is very obviously a low-budget film. It takes place pretty much entirely inside an adult bookstore and in a series of like underground brick tunnels, which all kind of look very similar to one another. And any hint as to the like epic end of the world shit that's presumably going on outside of the building comes almost entirely from sound effects and from Sally's character, who obviously is set up as she's very, very well versed in the Bible and particularly in the Book of Revelation. So she kind of knows what's going on at any moment. For example, that's like they hear the trumpet. She's like, oh, that's the third trumpet. And that means that the star Wormwood is falling to the earth. And that means all the water is poisoned now and all this other kind of stuff. So that's kind of, so she's kind of giving like a blow by blow, like as it goes, because they don't really show it. So like I said, you know, we don't see any of this stuff happening because like I said, it's very low budget. But I actually really admire like the filmmaker's spirit in making a movie with this like vast a scope and bringing it down to a more intimate level. I thought that was like a really good idea. Now, there are some CGI, like worm snake type creatures that I guess are like, you know, lesser demons or whatever. And the women have to fight them occasionally. And the demon, like Asmodeus or whatever, he shows up at the end. And it's just basically, it's practical effects, but it's just like a guy in a pretty okay costume. But for most of the movie's runtime, we're basically just following Angie and Sally as they're trying to come to terms with what's happening, like what's going on outside, and working together to get themselves out of whatever kind of minor scrapes like arise along the way, like while they're trying to get out from the building and, you know, trying to figure out where they're going to go from here, like if this is indeed what's really going on. Now, I wouldn't necessarily call this a horror comedy, although it does have humor in it. And I will say that it's like hard not to love a movie that uses the phrase "coos brews," which made me like laugh out loud. And there was also kind of, I think Angie at one point tells him something like, says something at one point too, where she says, yeah, I punched you right in your dusty twat. And it's like, that really made me laugh too. But yeah, so there is humor in it, but I don't think it's not like overtly funny. Like, it's not like a horror comedy. Now, there is some gore and violence, but not very much. So don't go into this like expecting some big gore fest, because it's not. Like, there is a little bit of gore, but not a lot. Like, a lot of it happens like off screen. Essentially, this is like a buddy film or like a character study, but it has sort of like this cool retro, like apocalyptic veneer to it. So I will say that given that, it's really a goddamn good thing that both of the lead actors are great. I mean, both of the women in this are dynamite. They're really, really fantastic. And I actually got really, really invested in their characters and in their struggles, and like just all the conversations they were having as more things about their personality came out. They were just really, really great. So I think that really, really helped like kind of elevate this movie quite a bit. Obviously, I related more to Angie because she's more like what I'm like. And, you know, and at the beginning, Sally, as she's supposed to, comes across as like this really condescending, like judgmental harpy who really doesn't know anything about the world but thinks she knows everything and thinks she has everything figured out and she can tell everybody else what to do. So obviously she's like really, really irritating and like insufferable at first, but as the movie goes on and more about her gets revealed, like why she is the way she is, why she has the beliefs that she has, she also ends up becoming sympathetic as well. And I actually did really buy into the friendship that develops between the two women as they're trying to get out of this situation. So I'm actually not really sure if two lesser actors could have carried this film, because so much of the success of this film and the premise of it is resting on their shoulders. Because like I said, there's not a lot of special effects. There's not a lot of locations. You don't see a lot of the stuff. It's mostly just on them, like almost all the time. And I think they really kind of hit it out of the park. So if the movie works, it's because of those two. Now, obviously, Revealer isn't going to be for everybody. I've seen some pretty scathing and negative reviews of it, not going to lie. But I've also seen some pretty rapturous ones as well. Yes, that pun was very much intended. But yeah, but I have seen some reviews of people like really, really hated it. So I think this is going to be one that's be like sort of divisive. I actually really enjoyed this quite a bit though. It was very noticeably kind of hemmed in, limited by its tiny, tiny budget. The pacing sagged in place. It's not a long movie. I think it's only an hour, 26 minutes, something like that. But there was like a little sag. And like I said, because a lot of it takes place in these tunnels underneath, so there's not, you know, the character really has to carry it because the scenery isn't really, you know, doesn't really differ all that much, like from scene to scene. And some of the special effects looked a little bit cheesy, like the worm, you know, the worm snake things, like the CGI was a little bit cheesy. The demon, like, outfit was a little bit cheesy. And you could tell, like I said, you could tell it was a low budget. But, I mean, the score and the music, well, much of it was actually done by a Gunship, was fucking awesome. I really, really liked the music for this. I really liked the 80s neon look of it, like with the saturated light. That looked really cool. I always love that kind of look. And the two leads were just stellar. I mean, I really got into their characters. They really sold it. And I think that their sort of journey toward mutual understanding seemed very genuine and heartfelt. Now, some of the dialogue was a little bit too, like, on the nose, I felt like, but I don't know. It was just, like I said, it was so genuine that it really didn't bother me all that much. Now, I thought the end was a little bit ambiguous, but I didn't really mind that all that much. I mean, it is the end of the world, after all, so it's not like, you know, two young women can actually win against, like, the end of the, like, the biblical apocalypse. So, you know, so I kind of like that they left it open-ended. Oh, I'll also add that if you are going to watch this, like I said, it's on Shudder, keep watching at least, like, through the start of the credits, because the movie actually, I'm assuming, like, using CGI, like, opens up and shows more of what happened in the world outside the bookstore, like, this whole, like, you know, I don't want to give it away, but you know what I mean? But just, like, keep watching it because it does kind of open it up. I've also heard that, you know, because two of the writers are, you know, known for their work in comics, so I've heard that there's, and I don't think it's out yet, but I think there's going to be, like, a sequel comic that will carry on the story of the two women, like, after the end of the world. And I think that's actually a great idea, because this type of concept, like, you can get away with it in this time because it's, like I said, it's just, like, a buddy film or a character study. But this concept, if you're going to keep going with it, it probably needs to be expanded into a medium where there aren't any budgetary constraints. So I think that's a great idea if they're gonna, like, you know, continue it in that format. So, I mean, if you like kind of small scale apocalyptic buddy horror that has kind of like some new wave flair, I guess, and also like great music, then, you know, give this one a spin. You might really like it. Don't expect like this big epic showdown between good and evil or anything like that. I think this is more just like kind of a relax and hangout kind of movie. Just get into the characters and, you know, their interactions and stuff like that, because that's kind of what is the backbone of this movie. And let me know if you've seen it, because I know like one of you guys, you know, recommended it. So I'd be curious to know like what everybody thought about this one. Because like I said, I feel like this one's kind of divisive, like at least from the reviews that I've seen. People either seem to really, really like it or really, really hate it. But, you know, I thought it was really, really good for the budget, you know, the limitations that they had. I think they did like a really good job. And like, I really did like the concept overall. So let me know what you think about it in the comments if you've watched it. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.